हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 5. Sukadev Goswami continued. Her hips, so we're talking about Putana, right? Her hips were full, her breasts were large and firm, seeming to overburden her slim waist. And she was dressed very nicely. Her hair, adorned with a garland of Mallika flowers, was scattered about her beautiful face. Right, because remember before the gopis, they all had flowers in their hair, so when they walked, then all the Mallika, remember, they were kind of small, then they would be falling. Her earrings were brilliant, and she smiled very attractively, glancing upon everyone. Her beauty drew the attention of all the inhabitants of Braja, especially the men. When the gopis saw her, they thought that the beautiful goddess of fortune, holding a lotus flower in her hand, had come to see her husband, Krishna. Footnote 3. Referring to verse 6, Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his Preacha Sandarbha, Anucheda 7, to increase the Lord's sweetness, the Lord's pastime potency, Lila Shakti, manifests amongst friends and among enemies also. Even the reflection of that potency of the Lord attracts the senses of the dear devotees. That is, reflected potency attracts the devotees, as seen in this description of Putana. Right? So it's a reflection. But still, because it's Krishna's potency, it's reflected, it's very attractive. So she has that potency that's reflected of Krishna's Lila Shakti. So therefore then, all the devotees then, they're also attracted. Because we have to remember it was by Krishna's arrangement of Yoga Maya that her Maya was able to function. Right? Because then, by that, he could come in and he could deal in this pastime with her. While searching for small children, Putana, whose business was to kill them, entered the house of Nanda Maharaj unobscured, having been sent by the superior potency of the Lord. Without asking anyone's permission, she entered Nanda Maharaj's room, where she saw the child sleeping in bed, his unlimited power covered like a powerful fire covered by ashes. She could understand that this child was not ordinary, but was meant to kill all demons. Right, because she, being someone who has this kind of, who has power, she can appreciate power. Yes. But she only knows how much power, you know, those who are mystics have. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a certain amount. It may be very great, and, you know, for us, we'll call it unlimited and this and that. But she could understand his is actually unlimited. Yes. Right? Lord Sri Krishna, the all-pervading supersoul, lying on the bed, understood that Putana, a witch who was expert in killing small children, had come to kill him. Therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. Thus Putana took upon her lap him who was to be her own annihilation, just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake is a rope. Srila Prabhupada comments. In this verse, there are two perplexities. When Krishna saw that Putana had come to kill him, he thought that since this woman was present with motherly affection, although artificial, he had to offer her a benediction. Therefore, he looked at her with a little perplexity and then closed his eyes again. Putana Rakshasi also was perplexed. She was not intelligent enough to understand that she was taking a sleeping snake on her lap. She thought the snake to be an ordinary rope. First she sees that he's meant to kill all demons, and then at the same time then she forgets. Right? The two words, antakam and anantam, are contradictory. Because of not being intelligent, Putana thought she could kill her Antakam, the source of her annihilation. But because he is Ananta, unlimited, no one can kill him. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Krishna showed the nature of a small baby and closed his eyes, as if to avoid the face of Putana. This closing of the eyes is interpreted and studied in different ways by the devotees. Some say that Krishna closed his eyes because he did not like to see the face of Putana, who had killed so many children and who had now come to kill him. Others say that Putana hesitated to take the baby on her lap because something extraordinary was being dictated to her from within. And in order to give her assurance, Krishna closed his eyes so she would not be frightened, right? Because she saw that he is the unlimited, you know, demon killer. So then by closing his eyes, and that then she would be more assured. And yet others interpret in this way. Krishna appeared in order to kill the demons and give protection to the devotees, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam, Bhagavad Gita 4:8. The first demon to be killed was a woman. According to Vedic rules, the killing of a woman, a Brahmin, cows, or a child is strictly forbidden. Krishna was obliged to kill the demon Putana, and because the killing of a woman is forbidden according to Vedic Shastra, he could not help but close his eyes. Another interpretation that Krishna closed his eyes because he simply took Putana to be his nurse. Putana came to Krishna just to offer her breast for the Lord to suck. Krishna is so merciful that even though he knew Putana was there to kill him, he took her as his nurse or mother. Right? So you have all these different aspects that could all be going on at once. But then, in this, that why this pastime was going on so nicely and all that, because it's not like the other demons. Other demons, then you know what's happening and different things like that. But with her, then there's this illusion about, right, that Krishna then allowed to happen through his own Lila Shakti. And that, and because she, how you say? And so that she would have this opportunity to deal and be, you know, then dealt with by the Lord. And dealt with by the Lord in this way. Because otherwise they might catch her before, and then she would take a big mood, and then they'd fight and all that. But she wouldn't be able to deal in the maternal affection. Does that make sense? Right? So this aspect, she can deal in the maternal affection, but because she's become a demon and all this, then he can deal with her and kill her accordingly. But she's gotten the blessings of dealing with Krishna as a mother, and so then she can go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? So you have to put all these together, because otherwise, if she's found out before, or because it's Vrindavan and she can't come in, or you know, all these things, then all these things would not be able to happen. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes? No? Yeah. So that's why then all of these things are going on in this particular way. Yes?
Can we say that actually Yogamaya arranged everything for such?
Even
she's, with the demons?
That, of course, is always there, but I'm saying that it's arranged in this particular way, that you don't know she's a demon, she could come in and therefore take the role that she's behaving as mother and be accepted as such. Because that's a very important part of this pastime. Right? The other demons are demons, they've come to be killed by Krishna. Right? They think they've come there to kill Krishna, but they've only come there to be killed by Krishna. Because as it said in the one, Krishna's come in order to kill all the demons, to protect the devotees. So that's the whole point, that he's there. So Yogamaya will arrange as much as is necessary so that pastime happens. But this one has a different element to it that the other ones don't. The others are just demons, they came to kill Krishna. But here, there's a demon who's come to kill Krishna, but there's the element of the parental relationship. Does this make sense?
Yes.
We, yes. Okay. Sugadev goes, Sugadev Goswami continued, yes. Putana Rakshasi's heart was fierce and cruel, but she looked like a very affectionate mother. Thus, she resembled a sharp sword in a soft sheath. Although seeing her within the room, Jashoda and Rohini, overwhelmed by her beauty, did not stop her, but remained silent because she treated the child like a mother, right? So she's given the opportunity that with their, because they are the mothers, right? And so with their blessing and that, or, you know, with their approval, then she's able to take that role. Because technically all parental rasa is happening under Mother Jashoda. Right?
And you said that the older gopis, they are also like mother.
Yes, yes. But I'm saying they're all following Mother Jashoda.
Yes, yes.
So that means that that's the line. So then since she's dealing as a mother, then to be accepted in that line, then she has to have the approval of Mother Jashoda. Well, if she would just been this big rakshasi who was yelling and screaming and waving her arms around, she wouldn't take her like that, and so it would be, you know, she wouldn't get that benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, although Putana was an outsider and although she personified fierce death, because the determination within her heart was to kill the child, when she directly came and placed the child on her lap to offer the child her breast to suck, the mothers were so captivated by her beauty that they could not prohibit her.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a beautiful woman is dangerous because everyone, being captivated by external beauty, Maya Mohita, is unable to understand what is in her mind. Those who are captivated by the beauty of the external energy are called Maya Mohita. And so I think, I'm not sure how you say it in French, but you have this famous position, right? Something femme fatale or something?
Femme fatale. Yeah.
Femme fatale. Okay. Yes, so it's the same thing, that they're very, very beautiful and attractive, but at the same time, very dangerous.
It's the same word since the beginning of the book.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Here, of course, the two mothers, Rohini and Jashoda, are not Maya Mohita, deluded by the external energy. But to develop the pastimes of the Lord, they were captivated by Yoga Maya. Because remember that Leela Shakti was reflecting off of her. And so, because the Lord's Leela Shakti is very attractive, because everyone's attracted by the Lord's pastimes, then they're attracted by this. So she was given the opportunity to take part by reflecting this Shakti.
Mm-hmm.
Such Maya Mohita is the action of Yoga Maya. Right? So this wasn't Mahamaya like in the material world. In his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, Putana represents the pseudo-guru. The pseudo-guru may appear in one or both of two forms. One, a deceitful so-called guru who preaches sense gratification or liberation, or both. This, that, or both. In some cases, this may be a person who's engaged in some Krishna conscious activity, but has not realized the course of pure devotional service and tries to give instructions to his disciples beyond his own understanding, or without regard for their situations.
Yes.
Two, the inward manifest spiritual guide in the form of the mundane, empiric reasoning faculty. The material mind is also like Putana, right? Because we may take, well, you know, what their mind is thinking.
Yes.
So the mind is going through, and we're taking that as our spiritual guide.
Yes.
And so that's also like, so this mundane, empiric reasoning. So it means it logically, but this doesn't make sense logically, you know, like this. Does that make sense? So sometimes it's there, we're trying to figure it out according to time and space.
Yes.
That's the same guru.
Yes.
Like that. So by hearing this pastime, then this aspect, this can be removed from the heart. Right? So speaking beyond our capacity, preaching sense gratification or liberation or both, you know, or trying to see things according to logic and that and taking that as authority. So any of this kind of authority, the impurities of this, then that is all removed by this pastime. Right? Because as we go through the pastimes, there are different anartas that are there within the heart of the devotees that needs to be removed to come to the platform of pure devotion. So as we go through all these different demons, then these aspects are being removed. Yes.
So now here, Putana is personifying the guru with teaching karma and jnana.
karma and jnana, or our own mind who is preaching, you know, empiric logic. That I'm intelligent, I'm logical, I, by that logic, will be able to understand Krishna consciousness. And so therefore, because I don't understand it, I don't accept this aspect. What this devotee is saying, or what the Shastra says here, or... So, in other words, they're being cheated. And instead of getting pure devotion, then we're getting distracted by karma and jnana, and, or by our own, you know, by, from the outside or from our own inside, our own inferior knowledge. Because the own inferior knowledge will do the same thing. It's going to cheat you with karma and jnana.
Yes.
So, does that make sense? Yes.
Now we say that if we follow those pastimes and we try to be sincere in studying them, means those anattas will go away automatically. Can we say
yes.
that?
Yes. Though there's, that we'll see is if he gives for all of these, goes to each one of these they give, then in two of them, I think the ones that Balaram killed, you have to make some. You have to make the effort, but he'll take them away.
But this one.
But these, they go away just by hearing the pastimes. Right? Balaram then expects a little effort, because he's the supreme personality of servitor godhead, so the servants can expect a little bit more. Right? In order to show mercy to his devotees, Krishna sucks the life out of Putana's breast to protect his own innocent ecstasy, which has arisen within the young devotees' hearts. Right? So this particular tendency, then Krishna takes that away. Of course, that one has to be sincere in devotional service and making that effort. And so then that's going away. But that you're trying to be sincere in Krishna consciousness, even though this particular thing you may not be focusing on. You're sincere in Krishna consciousness. Krishna will take these away. But those ones for Balaram, you have to be sincere in Krishna consciousness and be aware of those anarthas.
Yes.
While this we may not even think about, that the mundane mind is distracting us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Krishna will.
Which young devotees?
You're not on praying, you're young. We're young at heart. Yes, well, yeah, in this case, it's not necessarily your ideal. Yeah. Okay. According to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, in her last life, Putana was Ratnamala. The younger sister, Bali Maharaj, although Garga Samhita says she was his daughter. Right? So, you can explain it more. Okay, so since it's mentioned here, then we'll bring it up here. So, in this pastime, either being the younger sister or being the daughter of Bali Maharaj, then when she saw Vamanadeva, she was so overwhelmed with parental affection that she just wanted to, you know, be parental, you know, like that, you know. Get, you know, why you give him a squishy hug or whatever it is, like that. She wanted to do that, and so therefore she developed this natural parental affection. Right? So that's where that side comes from. But after she saw that Vamanadeva then tricked her father and took everything away and tied him up in ropes, then she became angry and wanted to kill him with poison. Right? And so she didn't there, but then the next life she became Putana, who then had the both these aspects. You understand? That's why the pastime had to unfold in this way. So she had to be given the opportunity to develop that parent, because that was had that inherent aspect. That was the major. But because of mundane consciousness, you know, attached it to her father, then the other side came up. Therefore, she's trying to poison him. Right? And he was small and cute and like that. So here Krishna's a baby. But by doing this, then she's been accepted by Mother Yashoda and Rohini. Now she's, you know, got that aspect connection to the line. So then when she's killed by Krishna, being purified, then remembering Krishna, she'll go back to Godhead and she'll go to Goloka and take part in the pastimes as in the parental rasa. But generally, the other demons, they all go to Vaikuntha.
Yes.
So she's the only one we hear that goes to Goloka.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So, that's why the pasta had to unfold in that way. She had to be able to come in. The other ones, Yogamaya, of course, is arranging that they come into Vrindavan. But in doing that, they're the demons, they're there, and everybody knows, and, you know, they're trying to avoid. Right? But here, they're not trying to avoid. Therefore, she's given the opportunity to deal in the parental rasa. Otherwise, if they had avoided, she wouldn't have been able to do that. Does that make sense? So you can see is the Lord's pastimes are so perfect that they can put together everything. Right? It means we get frustrated if there's one obstacle. Here he's got so many. But the Krishna's pastimes, he puts them together so perfectly that everything is satisfied. You understand? That's the whole point. That's where the variety comes in. The Lord's potency. Right? The Lord's potency has unlimited variety. So depending upon whatever it is, then for Krishna, then working out how to interact, that is then the nice part. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? The living entity in the material world, because they want to be the controller, therefore the variety and obstacles and everything set up by the feminine nature is not always appreciated. Yes. Right? Especially if it just keeps on going. But remember, Krishna is eternally living with his internal potency, so it goes on forever. So you want to be God, then it goes on forever. Not that, you know, okay, you know, one point it stops. No, it just keeps on going. But the difference is in the spiritual world, right? So that's why, how you say, the men get upset because they're trying to be the controller and the women are causing a thing where they're not. By constantly throwing up variety of things to stop whatever they're doing. Because the whole point of that is just more interaction. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the whole point. If you put up an obstacle, it just means more effort and a different variety of interaction. Men are thinking of it as efficiency of getting things done. But women are thinking of it as opportunities to interact. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why in the spiritual world it works out perfectly. So by his arrangement, the Yogamaya, all these different obstacles that Krishna has to put together dealing with his internal potency, then it's all worked out so perfectly. Right? And so like that, then each pastime it has so many different things that are obstacles that we would freak out about. But Krishna doesn't, because that's the fun. He is the controller, so the fun is working out the obstacles. We're trying to be the controller, so the less obstacles there are, the more obvious to us that, yes, I'm the controller, yes, like that. Right? So that's the mistake the men are making, and the women can't figure out why are they getting so upset. You know, because we're just trying to interact here. And the guy, well, you know, why are you making obstacles? We're trying to interact here. You know, but he's basing the interaction based on getting things done. She's basing on just on the moods that are being exchanged. Right? So that's the problem there, is because the jiva, thinking themselves masculine, then they're trying to take that role when they're not actually. Right? So that's why then the rules and regulations of how to interact are there, so that it makes it a little easier. Mm-hmm. Right? On the other side, right, we want to be fair, right? On the other side, then the difficulty comes because the form of it that's being used is the natural feminine form. But the difficulty is the living entity that's the female is thinking that they're male and that they're controlling this and enjoying it the way they like. But on the spiritual world, then the feminine nature is doing these, making all these obstacles to please Krishna. But here it's just being pleased themselves, therefore it has the mundane. So the feminine is using the form of feminine, but actually acting masculine. The masculine form is being actually feminine because of the soul. They're trying to act masculine, but it's not working because of the other. So you understand? So they're both switched in the things, and they're trying, and because of that, it's not working. That's why then, if you follow the standard process as given in the Shastra, then things work better. But ultimately, you can never give satisfaction to the soul because unless it's being done to please Krishna, then it's not actually, that's not what the exchange between the masculine and feminine nature is about. Right? The variety is made for Krishna's pleasure, but when we try to use it for our own, which the jivas in the material world are doing. Right? So that's the thing. So the men are trying to control for themselves, the women are controlling for themselves. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. And yeah, and just using the natural, I say, attraction, let's say, for one's own purposes. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why things work the way they work. But that working is supposed to be to please Krishna. Therefore, all the variety. So variety is to please Krishna. And so if there's contrariness, shyness, and elusiveness, it just creates more variety. Mm-hmm. Yes.
If we take the example of Ratnamala, who desired, and she got it, it means her desire was so intense?
Yes, yes. Because the Lord is there. I mean, the Lord is there and he's so cute that she has such overwhelming affection. But at the same time, as then when things unfold, because it's her father, right? Because the daughter's affection for the father, when it works out in this other way, then she becomes so angry. So both things are so intense. So both of them have to be put together. That's what we're saying. The Lord, through his yoga maya, worked both of these out. That she can have such, you know, that aspect of affection, and at the same time have that inimicalness. So to be able to express the parental, but at the same time to you know, just get... remove that inimicalness, then the pastime could take place. So you see, as Krishna's killing the demons, removing all the obstacles to the devotees, but at the same time he's doing it in such a way that everyone gets their appropriate benefit. Right? So she's different than the other demons, which are just big demons that are coming there to kill Krishna. So they don't have a backstory like this. There may be some backstory where Krishna's already killed them so many times before in previous lives, so the enmity is building up. But it doesn't have this aspect, because we just see the other ones, they'll be killed, merge into the Brahman and the Brahman platform. They'll remember the Lord because their heart is pure now. And then remembering the Lord, there's nothing to bring up material. It means if you go to Brahman and you don't know the Lord, then when you get tired of the being situated in Brahman, then you're going to think of activities and relationships and things that please the soul. So the only reference you have is the material world. So then you'll think of the mundane, and then Lord Shiva will come along because he's hanging out there in Mahakalapura, and then he'll send you back into the material world, right? Back into the universe, right? But those souls killed by Krishna, they merge into Brahman. Then when that moment comes, then nothing's more attractive than the Lord. So, in the purified state, they can see the difference between the mundane and the transcendental. So they choose the transcendental and go back to Godhead. That's why you see they merge in Brahman and then make it back to Godhead. Right? That's how it works for them. But it's not the acharyas don't recommend it as a as a path to go back to Godhead, because you would have to be that big that Krishna would personally come and kill you. And yeah. So, and that would take so long, right? So it's so much easier just in this lifetime you chant and go back to Godhead, and it's all favorable and nice, and you got a head start, right? Does that make sense? Yes.
There's also another reference in the Bhagavatam that says that when the demons are killed by Krishna, they will be born in Kali Yuga as Brahmanas.
The ones that are killed by Krishna?
Those that are killed by Krishna will be coming back in Kali Yuga as Brahmanas. It is mentioned in the Bhagavatam.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I've only heard that in Kali Yuga, the demons take birth as Brahmins.
So the demons killed by Krishna?
I haven't come across the reference. Which canto is that in?
It was in the first canto. The Parikshit Maharaj is from there. That's why the Sringi's episode was taken up in that sense.
Yeah, I only heard that demons take birth as Brahmins. I never heard ones killed by Krishna, because every time it mentions that, they all merge in Brahman. And it always infers that they go back to Godhead. Like that. Some places it says specifically in that, but no, because otherwise, if they're killed, why would they take birth in the family of Brahmins and be such nonsenses? Because killed by Krishna, you'd be completely purified. Mm-hmm. That's why they merge in Brahman. right? And then from Brahman, then if they came back, they'd have a purified consciousness. Though they, it doesn't mean they wouldn't be material if they were, you know, for most for those who merge in Brahman. But they would be, you know, well situated in goodness. So being killed by Brahman, generally they merge into Brahman and then go back to the, you know, Vaikuntha. Shishupal went, Jai Vijay went, like this. So then it's all mentioned that they all went back to Godhead. So I haven't heard, I mean, you can look at it more carefully, but I haven't heard that that was, right? Because on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, then we hear all those people were killed because they're killed by Arjuna. Seeing Krishna, then they all went back to Godhead. Right? So it's like a 18 days of preaching and 640 million people go back to Godhead. Not bad. Right? You know, not even just take up, you know, devotional service and develop Shraddha, you just actually go back to Godhead. Right? So. Yes.
Forceful
belief. Yes, yes. Yeah. So you check it, because that I know of, it's not those killed by Krishna. Okay, in this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes in The Harmonist, Putan is the slayer of all infants. The baby, when he or she comes out of the mother's womb, falls at once into the hands of the pseudo-teachers of religion. These teachers are successful in forestalling the attempts of the good preceptor, whose help is never sought by the atheists of this world at the baptisms of their babies. This is ensured by the arrangements of all established churches of the world. They have been successful only in supplying watchful putanas for effecting the spiritual destruction of persons from the moment of their birth with the cooperation of their worldly parents. No human contrivance can prevent these putanas from attaining possession of the pulpits. This is due to the general prevalence of atheistic disposition in the people of this world. The church that has the best chance of survival in this damned world is that of atheism under the convenient guise of theism. Oh, it continues. Those are therefore greatly mistaken who are disposed to look forward to the amelioration of the worldly state in any worldly sense from the worldly success of any really spiritual movement. Those who are inclined to make improvements to a spiritual movement by worldly or material means are greatly mistaken. Right? So this idea that that is actually what makes the mission stronger is the material facility. Material facilities may come, like you see in Braj. No one has more facilities than they do. Right? Because it means you hear of others having great opulence, but just that opening scene with Nanda Baba, you don't see that much opulence. Like that. So that's the point being made in the discussion between Surup Damodar and Srivas Pandit. There was Pandit and there was a Shri in there. So Srivas Pandit being a Vaikuntha man, then he's saying that the Lord of Vaikuntha is so opulent. And so therefore he's greater than Vrindavan. It's just some sticks and some, you know, grass and like this and that, you know, so nothing special. And then after he finishes speaking, then Srup Damodar makes the point that one grain of dust from Braj is Chintamani. All the wealth or opulence of Vaikuntha comes from that one grain of dust. In other words, how much it's so great, the magnificence that's being displayed in Vaikuntha. But that's just coming from one grain of dust from Braj. So that means the opulence of Braj is so much greater. But nobody cares about that. That's the whole point. Every tree is a Chintamani tree, Kalpavriksha tree. But they just ask for some fruits or fleaves or flowers or whatever is necessary, like they were decorating for Krishna's birth. So they just get leaves and flowers. right? You need something to offer to Krishna. They get fruit. So they just take it in the normal way. They don't get into the whole mystical thing about it, right? And the cows, the Sarabi cows, they could give anything, right? Remember that Sarabi cow that was with Vashishta when Kartavirya Arjuna tried to take it. Then she manifested huge amounts of armies, varieties of armies, that they all came and chased Vishwamitra and his whole army, because he was the emperor of the world, so he has a big army. They chased them until every last one of them was dead, and all that was left was Vishwamitra. And he had actually run 80 miles, so 120 kilometers, before everyone was killed, and then Sarabi stopped, and the armies turned around and went back, just leaving him there alone. Right? So they can give anything, but they just take milk. And then from the milk they'll make yogurt, from that they'll make the butter, and then the ghee. They won't just go and milk ghee or something. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is they have all that opulence, but the opulence isn't an important part of the worship of Krishna. Because in Vaikuntha, Krishna's God. Therefore that opulence is very much part of the worship. But in Braj, it's just he's the most wonderful person. Therefore none of that's necessary. Understand? So it's the greatest opulence and all that. So the idea that the material improvements, that's what's going to make the mission great, is not important. No, Prabhupada says purity is the force, not managerial ability is the force. Right? That's the whole thing. So, does that make sense? So it's not that all these success things and that, you can go on like this forever. They'll never work. People are using it, they have the karma, they can use it. That's because Krishna allows. They have that. But to get other people to be able, who don't have the karma, to learn it, it'll never happen. Right? No? How many, this last, couple of years, systems is it changing anything? Nothing. Right? Yes, so that's the whole point, because that won't entail. Purity is the force. Right? So the books are the basis. There, everything's being established by the acharyas, by the shastra. Right? Then that you're going to teach people about this, how to practice this. Right? That's going to be the thing. Then, whatever situation you're in, somehow or another, see that in connection to Krishna, get people to be able to understand and appreciate Krishna. How will you do that? By purity. So, by improving the quality of hearing and chanting, associating with the Vaishnavas, worshipping the Lord, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, like this, that's what's going to make it work. But if you try to make it that management and the arrangement and money and finances, that will make it work, it will never happen in the next 10,000 years. Right? It just won't happen. These things will improve by the quality of devotion that Krishna will give them, that devotees can use them nicely for Krishna, but they will never, ever make the mission better. They can't. Because they're mundane. Right? You can say, oh, but we're using in Krishna's service, but the whole point is we're thinking that they will make it better. Yes, we're using management for Krishna, but we're thinking the management will make it better. No, the devotion will make it better, and as managers, we engage management in the Lord's service because of that sincere devotion of engaging our own nature. That's it, because we say the management, what about the knowledge? What about the money? What about the work? So all the varnas, they just engage their nature in Krishna's service. Krishna being pleased, everything works nicely. Therefore, all the benefits come. So it works the other way around. Dharma produces artha, not artha produces bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So we engage dharma in Krishna's service. That's what we're doing. Then artha and kama become connected. Artha and kama aren't connected directly. Because directly, Krishna only comes down into as far down as dharma. He doesn't come lower than that. You have to take artha and kama and connect it up. Right? And so if you're not performing dharma, where's the connection? People can say yukta vairagya, they can say it all day. But generally the two words aren't analyzed. Yukta means actually connected to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And vairagya means you don't have attachment for that method of what you're attached, you're connecting. But generally, it's because of the total attachment. You know, so is it? But he comes down from aprakrita down into adhoksaja, which means that understanding of the soul, the metaphysical, those that kind of understandings. That's where you see Krishna pervading everything, because that's the gross form of the Lord, is the universal form. So appreciating that, understanding the position of the soul, and working on that level, that's where Krishna naturally comes down, because that's how he's pervading the universe. But, you know, in instances where people are fun, then he will also, he is the religious principles. Right? Because he says, you know, he's the performer of the sacrifice, he's the sacrifice, the person who's sponsoring the sacrifice, he's the ingredients of the sacrifice, the technique of the sacrifice, the ghee, the mantras, the offerings. Right? Does that make sense? That part he is. Lower than that, you have to go out, get your money, do all that, get these things, and then connect it to that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is when we're dealing with these managerial and other things like that, they're on the platform of artha. They're not dharma, they're artha. They weren't artha, no one would be following them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. they're artha. So unless it's brought up to dharma, it won't have effect. And dharma still is a waste of time unless it's connected to bhakti. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, we follow it nicely, we'll be here in the material world nicely, and that's where we'll stay nicely. Yeah. Does this make sense? Yeah? Yeah.
Dharma is like the Brahminical culture.
Sorry?
Dharma is like the...
Yes, it's the Brahminical culture. Because it's meant for Brahman. So when we say the Varnashram, we mean Brahminical culture because it's Daiva Varnashram. So it's about understanding Brahman, not that we're using Varnashram for our own purposes, like the demons will use Varnashram. Mm-hmm. So you have the Surak and Asurak Varnashram. Mm-hmm. Right? So when it's used for Krishna, that's the Surak or Daiva Varnashram. And when it's not used for Krishna, it's the mundane. So Asurak Varnashram. So the rules of Varnashram are the same, whether it's Surak or Asurak. The point is what's the mentality. That's why we say, if it's connected to Krishna, it's perfect. But if it's not, it's just a nice waste of time.
What about no Varnashram?
That's even more of a waste of time.
It should be also Asurak.
It is Asurak, of course. That's why we say it's atheistic. See, is dharma is the beginning of theism. Artha and kama without dharma is atheistic. Because on the platform of artha, then you have economics, you have ethics, and you have justice.
That's artha?
That's artha. Artha has those three. That's pranamoy.
Economics,
justice, and morality. Right? Because those three have to go together. So you see persons situated on that, they'll only talk these three.
Can we say, that artha would be our pranamoy and kama would be anima?
Kama is anima, yes. But, so the point is you work hard and get artha. Right? Now, if someone takes that, then what do you want?
Justice.
Justice, right? And why do we want justice? You know, why is that justice have authority? Because it's because of morality. You understand? But who establishes what's morality? You say, yeah, that's the point. If you steal something, it's immoral, right? Now, if you get on a boat, go across the ocean, land in another country, then go there, take everything that they have, load it back on your ship, and go back home. Not only you're not thieves, but you're national heroes. Right? So, who made that morality? The people that had the boats. You understand? Because otherwise, then it's, you know, how can you come and steal it? But you stole it. You know, so everyone's trying to steal the crown jewels. But where did they steal those from, right? From India. You understand? So that's the whole thing. It's So that's the difficulty. It's not established by Shastra what's the moral principle. So when devotees talk about morality, are they talking about theistic morality, means according to the laws of nature, or it's atheistic, where it's just people that I know and on internet, this is what they're talking, and so this is what I'm also talking. That's the delineation between theistic and atheistic. So in here, atheistic simply means it's not according to God's law. It's not counting God in the process. It doesn't mean that, you know, you have, you know, a shock of orange hair on your head and big, huge teeth and all that. What it means is just, atheistic means you're not considering God in it. Mm-hmm. And theistic means you're considering God as His laws. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So in those lower levels, you have so many things. We think of someone's intelligent, they're logical, they're educated, I say they see these big social things, they're caring about everybody, they know the economics, they can organize things well, then we think that they're quite elevated. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that they talk about, all of us being together, and that we'll even take it as spiritual. Mm-hmm. But all it is just pranamoy. It's just a matter of how much is the selfless aspect is there in pranamoy, or how little is there. So just that we cooperate together to get something done, you know, without too much, you know, fancy philosophy, that'll be the lower level. And then when we talk all this big philosophy and how we all do things together and share and this is our world and, you know, like that. And so, like, those kind of, it just means it's a little bit higher. But it's God's world, not our world. It's God's laws, not our laws. So it's actually atheistic, though it's very pleasant and nice, you know, and very popular. So that's the thing, is looking from the transcendental vision, it's not connected to God. Not that it can't be, it just isn't. And so if you do connect it, then naturally you would think of God's laws. Since you're trying to do something for God, why wouldn't you follow His laws on it? Why would you make up your own? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea.
And yes. This is what the modern religion are doing now.
Yes, because their basic thing is fear of God. There is the aspect that there's some theistic aspect, but generally the preaching is always about just cooperating and being a good member of society, you know, being an upstanding, you know, whatever it is, upstanding Christian or something like this. So it's not about the relationship with God and God consciousness. You're only aware of God in that by Him being there, there's fear, so therefore you follow the rules and the rules that are made by man. Right? Right? That means, is there a rule that if someone kills themselves, you know, commit suicide, that if in burying them you cut their head off, that keeps them from going to heaven? Where does that come from? But that's the law, that's the rule in that religion. Right? Because it's nonsense, you're not supposed to kill yourself. So that's something's got. But these kind of things, and then like that, where does this go? No, you're going to stay. The thing is you don't get a new body, right? Until that particular time, you know, that is there, is over, and then you'll get one. You know what I'm saying? So they make up all their rules. We have to remember is that at one point that group was Jewish. They rejected the old religion because they said it's archaic and it's from another part of the world, right? It's farther east. And so, you know, all the good Romans, citizens who are educated and modern and know all this nice philosophy from the Greeks, they won't accept it. So therefore, we have to get rid of that and just, you know, keep the philosophy. And, you know, it's all within your heart and it's all the, you know, just having that faith. You understand? And so then that means any ritual they have is made up. Because otherwise, Jesus was a Jewish rabbi. So everything he did was according to the Torah. So that means all the rituals they do may kind of have some distant thing in there, but they do it in their own thing. Right? Does that make sense? It's just made up. So that's the whole thing. Now, that someone follows a religious system and regulates their life and has faith in God and tries to, you know, act in a better way and have faith in God, that's always good. But what we're trying to bring out is this point of the morality is not necessarily coming from the laws of God. Many times they make it up themselves. You know what I'm saying? Like in the Vedas, do women have souls?
Yes.
Yeah. Right? Do animals have souls?
Yes.
Yes. But I think it's only 200 years ago or something that women were allowed to have souls, and the animals still don't have any.
Yes.
Yeah, it needs to take a little bit more time, you know. Like that. So the point is that if someone is approaching the Lord and seeing the Lord according to any religious system, that's good. But the point is the processes they follow in all this, then because they're so they're not seeing the greater picture, they're not seeing the platform of the soul, they're not seeing the conditioning, you know, the laws of nature. So therefore, then it will be very, very narrow in what they understand or accept. Because if you actually get into it, who's actually okay? You know what I'm saying? Because you have all the Christians, 2 billion of them, but each group thinks the other one is going to hell. So which one is not going to hell?
The older.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. And then you have the Muslims, you have the Sunnis and the Shiites, they each think the other one's nonsense. They kill each other. And then within one of their groups, then those who are more strict, they're okay, and the ones that are not, then they kill them. So it's just like, you know, where does it, you know, that's the whole problem. So then the transcendental line that's given, the transcendental consciousness, that's not seen, that's not the basis. So it's a morality that they themselves are good with. Does that make sense? So that's the problem. So that's what he's talking about, is that this idea that we'll make improvements, that will make the spiritual things happen, because God's been deified. Right? He created the heaven and the earth and everything in between, and then he stepped back and who knows what he's doing. And now we have to improve it. We've been given the mandate. No, we've given the mandate to adjust our lives according to the direction of the Lord and engage our position in the Lord's service, not to say that we control everything. So that's then what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is talking about here. So it's not the problem comes is in the consciousness is being used, that people are trying to be God conscious, they're trying to regulate your life. That's good, because God, there's only one God, so they talk about him, whatever it is, it's still the same God. It's just that what they know about him may not be as much as what the Vedas describe. They're still talking about the same person.
Looks like they are improving.
Sorry?
Somebody is improving in the at least. I saw one movie like 3 days ago. Exodus. It's about Moses.
Exodus. Oh, okay.
Moses. And there, when in the Bible says that the fire came from a tree or something,
bush.
And the voice was talking to Moses.
The voice was God.
Was God. But now in this movie, God is a person. He's a voice. So people like, they represent God. No, there is also a tree with a fire, but it's a boy there talking to Moses. So,
yeah, where they got that one from, I'm not sure. I said where they got that one from, I'm not sure, because in the Torah it says that God showed him the lower side of his back. So like around his kidneys. So he saw. That's what it says in the Torah. Maybe they're doing that, but that could be the interpretation of the screenwriters and the producers and, you know, and the director and, you know, like that. But you could say if in the general public, and then they're appreciating that and they're cool with that, and you know what I'm saying, and that the added, you know, how you say, world religionists aren't going down and burning down the studio that made the play thing. You know, it's not being banned in certain countries because of, you know, like that, then that's great. Point is that they're moving forward in this kind of thing, but it still will have, is even that they accept he's a person, because you can generally talk to everybody, he's a person, that's accepted. Now, whether he was a person in the bush or not, that's another thing. Right? Does that make sense? Just like he's the fire, but it doesn't mean that he's there. Just like, I think it's Gopal Bhakta Goswami. He specifically mentions, it's him or one of the Goswamis mentioned that when you're worshipping the fire, because we worship Radha Krishna, no? Like that. We're not worshippers of Vishnu, but because the fire, Krishna's there in the fire, but we don't install Radha and Krishna in the fire. We install Vishnu in the fire. Because it's fire. If the fire stays, it's, you know, Radha and Krishna too delicate to be in the fire. Why would we put them in the fire? You know, so because otherwise, no, we only worship Radha and Krishna, we're only using this, we're not doing it like that. But they make the point is, no, you're worshipping Radha and Krishna through the form as Vishnu and Lakshmi. Because they'll come in and sit in fire. Radha and Krishna don't sit in fire, they sit in kunjas. Does that make sense? So for us, we wouldn't put him in the fire. Does that make sense? But that they're accepting that personal aspect, that's very nice. Is that nice? Yeah. So that's always good. You'll see, it always goes back and forth. You know? I mean, there's other movies, so you know, where how you say that God's a person, and he has the one whole floor of, what do you call it? Some big, huge, high-rise building, and the whole thing's white. And the amazing thing is, he's black. Like that, so you know, even more, he's a person, and you know, they're moving forward. Not only, you know, he's black, you know, it's just like most pictures of Jesus, he's white, but actually, he was a Sephardi, so he would not be so white, huh? So the copper means he's white with some, not that he's copper color. You know what I'm saying? Huh? The point is here, in the gold, they put some copper. He's a reddish, so he's white with a little bit of reddish in it. Like that. Well, the gopis are like that, but with gold. You know, so you get different kinds of varieties of whites. So Jesus was Sephardi white. You know what I'm saying? So these things are nice, but the point is we're looking at right here, trying to see is where it's going wrong. That the concept that people are religious, trying to be religious, that's good. You know, but that they kill each other over the religion, that's not so good. You know, so.
According to the different level of consciousness, like a pseudo-religion means like a paramaya and something about Brahma, and real religion means about?
Yeah, real religion means it's based on the Vedic principles. So how much that they're following the Vedic principles, whether they know it or not, to that degree it has that strength, that validity. And to that degree, it's not. It's made up. Then it's going to be. That's going to be where it's weak. And then you have religions that are just totally made up, you know, like that. So then, you know, you get that kind of stuff. You know, so you get, it means that you regulate your life. You believe in some higher kind of force or that. Then that's good. But you know, that's like the what do you call it? The Aboriginals. They, you know, life's in nature and like there's some higher authority. There's some force. Mm-hmm. Like that. Is that what it is? Yeah. So anything that is that concept of progression is good, but you have to know what's good about it. It's not that because they're doing that then the whole thing is good. No, just these particular aspects are good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So they accept that God is ultimately a person. That's good. But then if you talk to them, then he's not. It's impersonal. He has no form. He has no... They'll say he's a person. You can talk about him in person, develop love for the person. They'll dedicate their whole life to that. But then when you get down to the detail, then he's impersonal. So they don't emphasize it. Their consciousness is they're focusing more on the personal. But they take the impersonal as higher than the personal. So that means that personal form is actually a temporary concept. So that puts them like the Smartas and all these others. That they worship the Lord and all that, but and they have that faith, but they don't have that ultimate understanding of the transcendental form. So in that way it drops it down there. But it's still a progression. You know, like Prabhupada said, that once following one of these kind of non-Vedic religions, that, you know, that they're being religious, and that's good. But let's say someone who's on the bottom of the pile in the Vedic, like a Kali worshipper, they're still in a better position because they're connected to the actual Shastra, the actual processes. Though they're following on a lower level for material purpose. But still, there's a guru, there's Shastra, there's sadhana, there's sadhya, there's sadhaka. So there are all these different aspects that are necessary are there, though they're being practiced on the lowest level of consciousness. So now, if that person comes in contact with Vaishnavas, then all they have to do is raise the positions of what they're dealing with there, and then for them it'll be very easy to practice. You know, so. Because generally those from, let's say, a smarter background, then they don't have any problem in practicing Krishna consciousness, the religion part of Krishna consciousness. They may sometimes have a problem with the philosophy, but not the religion. Right? Well, those who haven't grown up with the Vedic religion, they can catch the philosophy, but they have trouble with the religion. And so therefore then they speculate. All the other ones are sentimental. Right? So that the real difference between, you know, these things are just, how you say, this point. Oh, they're just sentimental. They're not even the philosophy. You know, then they're upset. Why don't they practice their religion? I came to the temple, no one deals nicely. You know, they're supposed to deal nicely. They're the priests. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that that's where it comes. We'll say it's, oh, it's because they're Westerners and Indians. But that's not actually the thing, because one in four, you know, people on the street in New York is Indian. You know, and so they're fitting in fine. It's just that when it comes to this, then there's a problem. Okay. Does that make sense? So one takes it sentimentally, one takes it by speculation. So, we're good? We're happy with our digression. Second one today. Yes. Okay. Those who are inclined to make improvements to a spiritual movement by worldly or material means are greatly mistaken. It is these worldly expectants who become the patrons of the mischievous race of the pseudo-teachers of religion, the Putanas, whose congenial function is to stifle the theistic disposition at the very moment of its suspected appearance. But the real theistic disposition can never be stifled by the efforts of those Putanas. The Putanas have power only over the atheists. It is a thankless but salutary task which they perform for the benefit of their unwilling victims. Right. So, in other words, these people want to be cheated, these people are willing to cheat them. But they can't actually have a long-term effect on the Krishna consciousness movement. They can try, but they can't, because Krishna is there. Krishna takes care. But as soon as theistic disposition proper makes its appearance in the pure cognitive essence of the awakened soul, the Putanas are decisively silenced at the very earliest stage of their encounter with newborn Krishna. The would-be slayer is herself slain. This is the reward of the negative services that the Putanas unwittingly render to the cause of theism by strangling all hypocritical demonstrations against their own hypocrisy. Right, so they're saying all these things, and then anything that's opposed to that, they're getting rid of. Mm-hmm. and then trying to apply that on the Krishna consciousness movement, then they're also then removed. But then they've done the nice work of removing, you know, so many things that are against, you know, the particular religious or spiritual processes. Does that make sense? So the concept is there. Does that make sense? Like that. But Putana does not at all like to receive her reward in the only form which involves the total destruction of her wrong personality. King Kamsa also does not like to lose the services of the most trusted of his agents. The effective silencing of the whole race of pseudo-teachers of religion is the first clear indication of the appearance of the Absolute on the mundane plane. The bona fide teacher of the Absolute heralds the advent of Krishna by his uncompromising campaign against the pseudo-teachers of religion. So when we see is that force is there in that, then it's just suddenly it's just quiet. We see when Bhaktivinoda Thakur came, that it was just quiet. Right? And then after some time, then all these ones start coming up again. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he preached, and then it's quiet. Right? So it's just the way that way it works. So one has to put in that effort. Sukadeva Goswami continued. On that very spot, the fiercely dangerous Rakshasi took Krishna on her lap and pushed her breast into his mouth. The nipple of her breast was smeared with a dangerous, immediately effective poison. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, became very angry at her, took hold of her breast, squeezing it very hard with both hands, and sucked out both the poison and her life. Footnote 4. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 10 to the Bhagavad Arkamriti Mala, chapter 19. This was entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Devotion, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book, regarding how Krishna can recognize and accept the service of someone trying to kill him. Okay, so, in other words, he's accepting just that service part. Mm-hmm. And giving that benefit of being able to take up eternal service. Mm-hmm. So that's the point, is if we're trying to serve Krishna, then he sees that part that's good. Mm-hmm. And the part that's not good, then he'll remove it by his own methods. And we see here, it's not necessarily that it's pleasant, but it's effective. Mm-hmm. Like that. So sometimes you wonder, why aren't things going so nicely? Because there's something to be removed. Right? So in this case, then the Putana aspect, our propensity towards making up our own philosophies and, you know, listening to the empiric mind and taking that as more important or more authoritative than Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Srila Prabhupada comments, Lord Krishna was not angry at Putana for his own sake. Rather, he was angry because Rakshasi had killed so many small children in Brajabhumi. Therefore, he decided she should be punished by having to forfeit her life. Sukadeva Goswami continued, unbearably pressed at every vital point, the demon Putana began to cry, please leave me, suck my breast no longer. Perspiring, her eyes wide open and her arms and legs flailing, she cried very loudly again and again. As Putana screamed loudly and forcefully, the earth with its mountains and outer space with its planets trembled. So, a powerful demon. The lower planets and all directions vibrated, and people fell down, fearing that thunderbolts were falling upon them. In this way, the demon Putana, very much aggrieved because her breast was being attacked by Krishna, lost her life. O King Parikit, opening her mouth wide and spreading her arms, legs, and hair, she fell down in the pasturing ground in her original form as a Rakshasi, as Ritrasura had fallen when killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. O King Parikit, when the gigantic body of Putana fell to the ground, it smashed all the trees within a limit of 12 miles. Appearing in a gigantic body, she was certainly extraordinary. Right? Because you'll try to be, you know, one is just your natural form comes, but at the same time, as you're trying to become big to deal with the problem. You know, that's just. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. Because of the pain, Putana ran out of the house, passed out of the village, and fell on the outskirts. The word api is used here to signify that not only while living, but even in dying, she was killing other living entities, like falling on the trees and like that. All the trees within an area of 6 kroshas, 12 miles, were crushed. It was remarkable that only the trees were crushed, her body having avoided crushing the houses of the village. These trees belonged to Kamsa's garden. Wow. Whose fruits were for his enjoyment, according to Vaishnava Toshani. Right? So the Vaishnava Toshani, it's not in Goswami's commentary. So that's the interesting thing is that, because he had the Taliban and different things are all connected, some things were connected to him. And so then she ran outside the village and then fell there. So Krishna's yoga maya arranged all that. So then she fell down and crushed all his trees. Right? And then when he asked about what's happening with the fruit from those trees, well, they're not happening because they were crushed. Crushed by who? By Putana. Putana is dead. You know, so not only he loses Putana, but he loses his garden. A 12-mile garden's a big garden, right? Sukadeva Goswami continued, the Rakshasi's mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. Right, you know, because the plows, have you seen the local plows? Very big. And then the point is very big at the, you know, the root. Then it goes down to a very sharp point. And they generally, you know, it sticks some metal there, or whatever it is, it's very sharp. So that's it. So like that you have teeth. So they're big. Her nostrils were deep like mountain caves, and her breast resembled big slabs of stone fallen from a hill. Her scattered hair was the color of copper. The sockets of her eyes appeared like deep, blind wells. Her fearful thighs resembled the bank of a river. Her arms, legs, and feet seemed like big bridges, and her abdomen appeared like a dried-up lake. The hearts, ears, and heads of the cowherd men and women were already shocked by the Rakshasi's screaming, and when they saw the fierce wonder of her body, they were even more frightened. Without fear, the child Krishna was playing on the upper portion of Putana Rakshasi's breast. And when the gopis saw the child's wonderful activities, they immediately came forward with great jubilation and picked him up. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, entering the maternity ward, the gopis could not see Krishna there. Jashoda and Rohini had fainted. Desiring to see him, they went outside the house and saw him playing on Putana. Srila Prabhupada adds, here the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. No, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Although the Rakshasi Putana could increase or decrease her bodily size by her mystic abilities, and thus gain proportionate power, right? Because the bigger she is, the power is greater. So she's taken her full form that she can manifest with her mystic power. And still it wasn't powerful enough. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally powerful in any transcendental form. Right? So he's small or he's big, it doesn't matter. He's just as powerful. That's the point. Krishna is the real personality of Godhead because whether as a child or a grown-up young man, he is the same person. He does not need to become powerful by meditation or any other external endeavor. Right? He doesn't have to sit down and then meditating on something and then he, you know, finds himself and gets the power and then, you know, yeah. We know that one, right? Yes. He is who he is. Right? He does not. Therefore, when the greatly powerful Putana expanded her body, Krishna remained the same small child and fearlessly played on the upper portion of her breast. Saraishvarya Purna Bhagavan. Purna Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always full in all opulences, regardless of whether he's present in this form or that. His potencies are always full. Parasya Shaktir Vividhaya Shruyate. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 1365 Purport. He can display all potencies under any circumstance. So wherever he is, all his potencies are with him. Therefore, wherever he is, he can manifest anything. And at the same time as wherever he is, that whole thing, it's all his potency anyway. So you say, oh, how can he manifest here? But the potency here is Krishna. potency everywhere is Krishna. So he can manifest everywhere he likes. But the point is those aspects, whether we think, oh, that's so amazing, but those amazing things, that's what's not so important to Krishna. Because that's just who he is. So what's important to him is the loving relationships between him and the devotees. Right? In other words, if you're so powerful that no one is your equal, no one can defeat you, no one can do anything to you, at any time, at any place, in any circumstance, eternally, what's the fun in that? That's just reality. So for Krishna, then it's about interacting with those who have affection. Because anybody who doesn't have affection, he can defeat them easily. He doesn't require anything to defeat. So where's the taste in that? But with the devotees, then they overwhelm him with their love. So he's defeated by their love. That's the interesting thing to Krishna. Because he is God. But as God, the only thing interesting is devotion of the devotees. Now, whether they are just adding to his greatness, adding that love, so you have Vaikuntha, or the love is so great that they don't even recognize his greatness, then that makes for the different realms, the different flavors or tastes that is tasted in the spiritual realm. Does this make sense? Okay. Verses 19 to 31, the elder gopis invoke auspiciousness. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Thereafter, Mother Jashoda and Rohini, along with the other elder gopis, waved about the switch of a cow to give full protection to the child Sri Krishna. Srila Prabhupada comments, when Krishna was saved from such a great danger, Mother Jashoda and Rohini were principally concerned. And the other elder gopis, who were almost equally concerned, followed the activities of Mother Jashoda and Rohini. Here we find, right, so, because they're the head of that rasa. So the manifestation of it is the fullest with them. And then everybody else follows. So, and here, because you're dealing with parental rasa and friendship, then there's not going to be any difficulty in rivalry there. You understand? Because like all the cowherd boys, even though they may have different relationships, there's four different kinds of cowherd boys, and they're at different ages and all these different things, but there's no rivalry. They all just do everything together. Right? Because there'll be that friendship between all the elder gopis. So therefore, Mother Jashoda and Rohini, they're going to lead the whole rasa, and that's going to work. You don't have to establish that. Right? But you see with Radharani, because you're dealing with the conjugal rasa, therefore the sense of possession is greater. And so then that aspect, you get that, because of the nature of it, you get that aspect of chivalry. There will only be friendship in a group. And so because of this, that rivalry will be there. Does that make sense? So if there's some common aspect to please Krishna, by all working together, they'll all do it because they want to please Krishna. But when that greater thing is not there, then they're going to work in their own groups. Does that make sense? So it's just a difference in the flavor. Right? Does that make sense? Because here you're dealing, it's all in that masculine aspect, right? The parents with the children, they're in the masculine possession, Krishna is in the feminine. It's all about them. So in the masculine position, you don't have that rivalry. Mm-hmm. But when you're dealing with the feminine, that's where you'll have the rivalry. You understand? Yeah. Here we find that in household affairs, ladies could take charge of protecting a child simply by taking help from the cow. As described here, they knew how to wave about the switch of a cow so as to protect the child from all types of danger. There are so many facilities afforded by cow protection, but people have forgotten these arts. The importance of protecting cows is therefore stressed by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Krishi Guru Raksha Vani Jyam Vaishya Karma Subhava Jyam. Bhagavad Gita 18:44. Even now in the Indian villages surrounding Vrindavan, the villagers live happily simply by giving protection to the cow. They keep cow dung very carefully and dry it to use as fuel. They keep a sufficient stock of grains, and because of giving protection to the cows, they have sufficient milk and milk products to solve all economic problems. Simply by giving protection to the cow, the villagers live so peacefully. Even the urine and stool of cows have medicinal value. Right? So, somebody says, so we understand switch. That means you're taking the hairs from the tail and making a brush out of that. So that's what's being used. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The child was thoroughly washed with cow urine and then smeared with the dust raised by the movements of the cows. Right, so washed with cow urine means you have cow urine, you put it into a bucket of water. You don't, it's not cow urine straight. Like that. Only some very enthusiastic brahmacharis do that. And that's why they're brahmacharis. Right? So, it's mixed with water because it's purifying effect. You don't have to have it straight to do it. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's just like when you take a bath, you don't put the soap on straight. You actually use it mixed with water. Right? Yes? No?
Yes.
Just to make sure you're okay. So therefore, then it's there. And then after you rinse it off. So it's nice. Like that. Does that make sense? Then the dust raised by the movements of the cows, right? When they come back in the evening, that time in the evening is called Golduli. So that dust is considered very purifying. So that dust is collected and kept for such occasions. Right? Whenever there's need for a purification. Then different names of the Lord were applied with cow dung on 12 parts of his body, beginning with the forehead, as done in applying tilak. In this way, the child was given protection. Right. So then they bathe him and they put on tilak using all the names of the Lord. Right? The gopis first executed the process of achmana, drinking a sip of water from the right hand. They purified their bodies and hands with a nyasa mantra, and then applied the same mantra upon the body of the child. Right, so they were using the Nyas Mudras and all that. So these are all technical things where you chant all the mantras on there. Then they use it and then they establish it on the child. That makes sense. So these are technical things. What we see here is that they were, I think Prabhupada will talk about it. Yes, well, he'll talk about it. We'll bring it up there. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In the beginning, because of great fear, they began the rituals for protection without doing achman. After calming down, they then performed the rituals in the proper way. By first performing achman, samsprisha shalila. They then performed anganyas and karanyas on their own bodies and hands. Then on the child's limbs, such as feet, they invoked bijas. Right? So then they're doing it for Krishna. Right? Ourselves, as technically when we do pujas and that, we don't use the karanyas and anganyas on ourselves. Because it's part of the Vaikuntha process of worship. So it's one of the things that, of the five things that's mentioned that we don't generally use. So they're not against the Vaishnava principles, we just generally don't use them. But here, because it's all about Krishna and all that, then they're using it because they're standard Vedic things. Right? But for getting to that position, we may get distracted by the ritual itself. Yes. They don't, as you see, they just started taking care of Krishna and forgot to do achman and this and that. Then when they calm down, then they started going through it and doing it properly. Srila Prabhupada adds, Nyas mantra includes achman, or first drinking a sip of water kept in the right hand. There are different Vishnu mantras to purify the body. The gopis, and in fact any householders, knew the process of being purified by chanting Vedic hymns. The gopis executed this process first to purify themselves, and then to purify the child Krishna. That's why in puja, then you have the beginning is after you collect the paraphernalia, which they had, right? Then there's yoga, where you're going to then bring yourself to that proper position of purity. Then you're going to offer that the puja then to the deity in Ija. So they're following the same thing, right? Does that make sense? So all it is what we're getting in these processes that the Shastra give us are the same processes. They've just been formalized so that we can see the formal aspect of it, and that way then catch it. While here, it's all being going on in that pure affection. Mm-hmm. One executes the process of the anganyas and karanyas simply by drinking a little sip of water and chanting the mantra. The mantra is preceded with the first letter of the name, followed by anushwar and the word namaha. Om namo jas tvangri avyat mam mano mani mams tava Chanuni Avyat, and so on. Right? So they're just taking all the things and then they're going through Right? So you can see here, even what they're using is a longer, more of the Pancharatric or the Vedic things. They're going more in there, while what we use are generally the shorter forms, that are more the Sattvika Tantras. Because generally we don't have the patience. Does that make sense? So that's why all our stuff is, you know, idam asanam, you know, swagatam suswagatam. That's the short forms. Yes. It means Sanatana Goswami, when he shows the original forms that are probably still used in some of the Goswami temples, big, long, old mantras like that. So people are freaking out with these. And why is it so ritualistic? This isn't ritualistic at all. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they're using a little bit more elaborate here. And so, and these are the gopis. So, yes. By losing Indian culture, Indian householders have forgotten how to execute the Anga Nyas and are simply busy in sense gratification without any advanced knowledge of human civilization. Mm-hmm. Right? So otherwise they were using these before. Right? Sukadeva Goswami informed Maharaj Parikit that the gopis, following the proper system, protected Krishna, their child, with this mantra. May Aja protect your legs. May Maniman protect your knees. That's what we're saying. Mam mano Manimams tava januni avyat. Mm-hmm. Right? So then Maniman, so then you, Mam mano, right? Because you're going to take the first letter. So Manimam, so that's going to take, you're going to end with Mam. Is that what I'm saying? Yagya, your thighs. So Yam, your thighs. Achuta, the upper arm. You understand? So it's just how Bija syllables work. That didn't make sense? You didn't catch what we were referring to? You didn't. Means may Aja protect your legs. Right? May Mani Mam protect your knees. Yagya, your thighs. So for Yagya, you'd have Yam. Yes. Right? Yes. Achuta, the upper part of your waist. So for Achuta, you'd use Am. You understand? That's one of the ways to use. Or there's very specific ones. But the general rule is that whatever the first letter is, if you don't have a Mula mantra, you can use, like, let's say, Prahlad. So Prahlad's first is Pa. So then or Pra, like that. So then Pram. Pram Prahlad Aya Namaha. You understand? Or Nadasingha. Nam Nadasinghaya Namaha. It's a general rule. Or you can use Om, or there may be a specific one. Does that make sense? So, yeah. So any of those, they're all like this. So here. And Haya Griva, your abdomen. May Keshava protect your heart. Isha, your chest. The sun god, your neck. Vishnu, your arms. Urukrama, your face. And Ishwara, your head. May Chakri protect you from the front. May Sri Hari, Garad Hari, the carrier of the club, protect you from the back. Right? So all that is a bigger mantra. So all these are there. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So in all these, they're saying the mantra, touching that part of the Lord's body. Right? Mm-hmm. And so then to put that on, they would have put it on themselves first. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And may the carrier of the bow, who is known as the enemy of Madhu, and Lord Ajana, the carrier of the sword, protect your two sides. May Lord Urugaya, the carrier of the conch shell, protect you from all corners. May Upendra protect you from above. May Garuda protect you on the ground. And may Lord Haladhar, the Supreme Person, protect you on all sides. Srila Prabhupada comments. Even in the houses of the cultivators, who are not very advanced in the modern ways of civilization, the ladies used to know how to chant mantras to give protection to children with the help of cow dung and cow urine. This was a simple and practical way to give the greatest protection from the greatest dangers. People should know how to do this, for this is part of Vedic civilization. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these are just standard stuff. Here?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema ki.